probably not one person in here today that in some way or another has not been touched by love, or felt the feelings of love, or felt like they were in love, and they couldn't sleep, eat, or drink, or do anything else. No matter what age we are, it's interesting to me as I interact with people of all walks of life, and of all ages, and of all experiences. One thing holds true for every single individual, and that is this intense desire inside to want to be loved and give love. To want to be in love. I used to think it was just something, you know, that happened to you when you were 17, when I was 18, when I was 16. But I've found that the older I've gotten, the more I enjoy being in love. I don't just want to be loved. If all of us in this room were honest, we don't just want to sort of go through our marriage grinning and bearing it. We want to experience something exciting, something meaningful, something deep, something that's getting richer, something that burns hot. That's what the Song of Songs says, that love is a raging fire and many waters cannot quench it. If you were to just douse it, you couldn't douse the flame. And yet I find it in many people's experience the exact opposite has happened. All it took was a squirt gun. And the fire is gone. All it took was a month worth of marriage. And the love is gone. It's gone. We live in a time, in my opinion, that where people are greatly disillusioned about love. I listen quite often to the radio stations, I listen to the different variety of music stations, and I listen to what people are saying. I listen to what they're singing about. And 90% of the time, if not more, people are singing about love. Whether it's country western, whether it's jazz, whether it's rock, whether it's R&B, whether it's Luther Vandross at the Target Center, it's love. The king of romance is love. And sometimes we don't want to admit, in fact, just how in love we are with love. Just how captivated our country is with wanting deep, meaningful, passionate, exciting love in our life. Now that's created sort of a problem because what happens is we get really, in some ways, a false impression of love and then we get married and we wonder what happened. We wonder, where did all these vibrations go? Where did all this feeling go? Where did all this depth go? And it's amazing to me, before we get married, how much we're consumed with the other person. And I remember, when I met my wife, before she was my wife, I could think of nothing else, sleep nothing else, drink nothing else, eat nothing else but Kathy, Kathy, Kathy. She couldn't either because my name was all over her notebooks. You know how that is, ladies. You just sort of like to pretend what your name's going to be like when you have his last name. And darling's a pretty neat name to get, let me tell you. Okay? That's a pretty cool name when you're in love. And you just sort of write it. You figure out how your new signature's going to be. All your notebooks have it. I know. I've seen this with one woman after another. And guys, we kind of do it secretly, you know. We carry the picture around, look at it, daydream, meditate on them. It's all we think about. Being in love is probably one of the most exciting earthly experiences there can be. It's thrilling. It's absolutely thrilling. And yet if you listen to the words of the songs that are sung, many people interpret love to just simply be sex. They think that's what love is. Love is sex. With as many people as I can get, I want to be in love as many times as I can. Now it's interesting, to be real honest with you, because I've been listening to this, studying this for about the last 7 months. It's interesting to listen to rock and roll definition of love and country western definition of love. There's really a difference. It's amazing how, in some ways, I know some of you aren't going to be willing to believe this, but you just have to take my word for it, how wholesome country western is compared to rock. Primarily, rock is just sex, love. And I find that as I listen to country western, there's a deeper message there. Often there's even a reflective ballad of someone who realizes they blew it. They blew it because of their cheating lifestyle. And they had something in the palm of their hand and they let it go. I can tell you how many people I've talked to who have had the deepest regrets for the choices that they've made in their life. They had something wonderful, could have been beautiful in their life, and they destroyed it. There's a movie out right now titled The Prince of Tides. And in all honesty, that's what the entire movie's about. Nothing in that movie could be further from the truth. It's about a guy, his marriage isn't going too well. You don't know this till the very end. You think you're looking at the most exciting love in the world till you find out in the last 10 minutes that it's with another woman that he's not married to. But she helped him discover his real self and that he really needed to return to his wife. And you know, and many people watch that movie and you know what you'll think? That is beautiful, man. It's like coming in touch with your feelings, man. It's like, it's so esoteric. It's so universally right on. And we live in a society that really swallows that kind of garbage, hook, line, and sinker. I tell you something about this series. I'm pulling no punches during this series. This will be no powder puff series on marriage, and I want you to know that. And I want to tell you why. Because I'm tired of presiding over marital funerals. I am tired. It breaks my heart to watch young men and women, middle-aged men and women, older men and women, ruining their lives because of a false philosophy, because of a false error and erroneous thinking when it comes to love and marriage. God intended for your marriage to grow richer and richer. He intended it to be lifetime love. Not annual love, not prenuptial love, but lifetime love. That's what he intended. And yet I find person after person, I don't love him anymore. I don't love her anymore. I just don't. It's gone. The love is gone. I'm going to tell you right now, that's bogus. And you'll understand why when I'm done this morning. That is a false statement. If the love is gone, there's a reason why it's gone. And primarily, it's because you let it go. And I'm going to get probably more open during this series than I've ever been on a series. So you can understand that I don't live in a different world than you do. I want you all to understand that before I go on here this morning. I don't live in a false world. I don't live in a pastoral world. I don't live in my ivory palace, guys and gals, men and women. I have to experience the same kind of temptations every single person does. And I've had to walk away from temptation as a married man, just like anybody else should. Or struggles with. There have been many times I've met someone that in a fleeting moment appealed to me more than my wife. That's life, friends. That's a fact of life. It's just like buying a car. I was just at a conference in Indianapolis for a week. They had the World Auto Show. Man, I'll tell you, you want to breed some discontent and some deep, passionate lust? Go to the auto show. Man, touch the Viper. And it's amazing how that happens in our lives. You go to this auto show, you just bought a new car. I mean, you've studied the market research. You have studied what's out there, and you just made the best buying decision of your life. And then you made the greatest mistake of your life. You went to the auto show 3 weeks later. And you're walking through there, and you walk out stunned. God, everybody else has it so good. I mean, I remember I bought my 90 Aerostar van just, it was a year ago, bought it used, and it's the neatest thing I ever thought, you know, you could get. That's about all you can get now if you have more than four kids to drive legal. You have to have a van, you know, to belt everybody in. So, I got this van, and wouldn't you know it, they just came out with dual airbags. Oh man, now my wife's going to die if we're in an accident, because there's no dual side airbag. And then they change the console. And they put the stick up on the column instead of the floor. It's a lot roomier. It's like, man, what a drag. What discontent. I tell you what will happen, man. The same thing will happen with Playboy. The same thing will happen as you allow your eyes to look at somewhere else. The grass is always greener on the other side of the fence. Don't you understand that's a fact of life? Now, there's a way to secure your relationship against that and to fortify yourself. You'll have to come back in the weeks to come to find out how. Because I'll share with you how. I'll share with you, in fact, how you can make your grass greener than anybody else's. But that's just a fact of life, and it happens, and yet I find people all the time. What'll happen is, you go through this beautiful courtship period. It is so incredible. I remember first time I saw my wife, when we first met, obviously she wasn't my wife. I never know how to refer to that period. My fiance, no, my wife, no, the girl who I eventually married. However you refer to it, I remember the first time I saw Kathy. And it was at this retreat that I went to. Now you have to understand something about me. All right, I was 20 years old. I had given my life to Christ a year earlier. Before I gave my life to Christ, all my life revolved around was sex and women. I mean, that's all I thought about. Doesn't mean they thought about me. I'm just saying that's all I thought about. Okay? By the way, just for your information, in a recent survey, the typical American male thinks about sex the majority of his entire adult life. That's what society has come to today. It's a tragic pattern. It's one that only God can break. But I'll tell you, it'll destroy your life. And that's the phase of my life that I was in. Then I came to know Christ. And I began to realize some things about myself. I began to realize I only know how to think about women in one way. And that's the only way I know how to think about it. I don't even know how to relate to them. I don't know how to talk to them. I don't know how to be friends with them. I don't know how to purely love them. And God began working on my life. And in the meantime, I realized, you know, this dating stuff for me, I'm not putting myself in that situation. Because I know exactly what will happen to me. And I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to wrong another person in my life. And I'm not going to wrong God. So I took a whole different course to life. I just said, you know, God, here's the deal. I don't even know if you want me to get married, and I'm willing to never get married. Quite frankly, life is too short. There's too much to do, too much to accomplish. And I don't have time for this scene, okay? So, if you want me to get married, you just bring my wife to my doorstep. I mean, you know, kind of like someone who wants a baby. One day they open the door and there's a little orphan child in a basket with a note that says, please take care of my baby. I said, so when I meet the woman you want me to meet, you have a note on her forehead that says, please take care of her because this is my child. Okay? So that was the visual picture that I had of my future. And I'll never forget that. And man, I'll tell you, it worked. And for a year and a half, man, I was going along great. God was just doing some wonderful things. I go to this conference. Farthest thing from my mind was women, marriage, and all that kind of stuff. In fact, I'd come to the conclusion I was probably not going to get married because I wanted to be like Paul. And he never got married. This is good enough for Paul. It's good enough for me. I was serious about this commitment. Well, God has an amazing way of getting our attention, you know. And it was rainy and it was wet out and it was kind of crummy. But there was this popcorn stand and I love popcorn. And so I went over to the popcorn stand and there was this group of people talking. And I'm a friendly sort of person. And there was this young woman by herself and there was me. And I thought, well, it'd be pretty rude not to say hi. And these people are already in conversation. So I just started talking and man, that was it. 15 minutes, I was struck. 15. I can't even describe what happened. It was like a ton of bricks hit me. I had never met a person in my life, a woman, who was as serious about what I was to an equal degree. We started sharing with one another a little bit about our life and how we come to know Christ, and it was almost identical. And I thought, man, this woman's serious about God. She had a smile that would light up a room. She had a radiance that would just light up a room. And you know what was really interesting? It was the first time I never really even noticed anything about her body. I just noticed her face. She's just aglow with Christ. This girl is serious about God. Well, I went home that night and I couldn't think. I was with a buddy, man. And I was singing love songs. Man, I was just singing as we're driving the Datsun home. You know, we had this little sports car. And he's like looking over me, man, what has happened to you? I said, man, I'm struck. I don't know what to say. I just met the girl I'm going to marry tonight. I know for a fact I'm going to marry this girl. This is the girl God wants me to marry. What? Wait a minute, Mark, come to your senses. How do you know that? Well, I just know. Well, I started to pray about it. The next day I was headed for the conference. And I thought, you know, God, I'm a manipulative person. And this is what I'm used to doing all the time. You know, it's kind of like chasing the foxes. You just kind of go after them, go after them, go after them until they give in. And I thought, Lord, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do that. In fact, if you want this thing to happen, you bring it about. You give it, get us into a conversation. And I really was serious. So the whole day, I'd see her, I'd avoid. I didn't even go up and say anything. Didn't say hi. Didn't say anything. I just kept going through the day, trying to learn what I could about my Christian life. And it came to the very end when we were getting ready to leave. We were in a room just packed with people. And I was visiting with a friend and I was eating something. And I finished eating and I went to throw it away. And I literally just turned around, ran into her. Literally. By mistake. She had her back to me. I didn't know who it was. Ran into her. She turned around. I said, excuse me. Oh, thanks God. And we started talking. And we talked for about 2 or 3 hours, man. And I'm telling you, I was even more struck. I thought I was as struck as I could be. I was more struck. I was up the whole night praying. I'm serious. I just laid in my bed looking at the ceiling, thinking and reading God's words. God, how, you got to do this, man. I never met anyone like this in my life. But Lord, I will not settle for second best. I want the best. I want the very best. And I want the best for her. Well, I knew we were going to be riding back and forth because we'd exchange addresses. And I decided, I'm used to lying. That was what my life was like before. I'd lie. I'd say anything that was in my own best interest, to my advantage. And I decided, I'm not going to do this. I'm not hurting this individual. So I decided that honesty is the best policy. So 2 weeks later, I went down to where she went to school. She didn't know I was coming. And she wasn't there. She was out running. At the time, she was running for the cross-country team at her school. And so I didn't know that either. And her roommate told me. So I just sat on the step. And I could tell when she walked up the step, she was really glad to see me. That kind of gave me a little extra confidence. I get, Mark, I was just thinking about you while I was running. I can't believe you're here. I said, yeah, I'm here. And I said, I wanted to know if we could talk. I said, yeah, I'd love to visit with you. So I decided I'm just going to lay it on the line, share what I've been thinking, wondering what God's been doing, and say, would you be willing to pray about this? Now, I knew she could either say I was fresh, slap me, tell me I was a jerk. I didn't mind. I didn't mind that. I was just determined to be honest this time. I'm not saying this is the perfect way to do it, by the way, either. I'm just saying this was my experience. So anyway, we went for a walk, and I told her what I was thinking. I said, Kathy, I have to tell you something. I have not thought about getting married at all at this point in my life. I said, but I have to tell you, I've never met anybody like you in my life. Anybody. Who has such a passion for Christ and such a desire to serve Christ. I've been wondering. I have not been able to stop thinking about you since we met. And I've been wondering, maybe God wants us to get married sometime in the future. Anyway, I was just wondering if you'd be willing to consider it, pray about it, think about it. She said, I don't believe it. I've been wondering the same thing. I haven't been able to get it off my mind. So we started praying about it. 8 months later, we got engaged. Now, I'm a kind of a, I wasn't a very romantic guy at that time. Guys, we can learn to be romantic. I was not very romantic at that time in my life. I was very practical. So when I finally asked her over the phone. That's how practical I was. I reached out and touched someone, And she said yes. She's jumping up and down on the other end of the phone, and I'm on cloud nine thinking this is the greatest thing in the world. Well, we went to talk to certain people about this, and they weren't too excited about the situation. And so for 2 years, I was planning on getting married like 3 months after that or a month after that. 2 years later, we get married. And I'm thinking to myself, our love can endure any test. There ain't no mountain high enough. It's going to keep me from you, baby. There's nothing, man. I'll do anything. I'll do anything it takes to make this marriage work. This is a lifetime relationship. Man, things are great. And man, we knew the Lord and things were just really wonderful. And we'd gone through tremendous trial just to get married. We had a whole bunch of people against us. Oh, this isn't what you should do. This isn't what you should do. Finally, we got married. Our honeymoon was a disaster. It was an absolute disaster. In fact, the next 3 years went from one bad thing to worse. And guess what I found out about myself? I found out that what I thought was gone before I came to Christ was right here in my marriage. I was self-centered and had a one-track mind. And I thought, this is going to be great, man. I can have sex anytime I want it. This is going to be fantastic. Little did I realize, my wife, she was on another track. And it created tremendous tension and turmoil in our relationship right from the very beginning. Little did I realize that our immoral past, before we come to know Christ, that everybody tells you is so great and wonderful, would follow us right into our marriage. And we'd have to deal with it, just like God said we'd have to deal with it. I didn't know that. I had a very Hollywood impression of love. I thought, man, this is going to be great, you know. Man, I'll tell you what, you watch MTV and you know what you get from MTV? Women are just ready anytime, man. It's just the hottest thing you ever dreamed of. That is our masculine perspective of love. And when the curls start to die down, we don't tolerate it. We move on. Either fantasy in our brain or we move on physically. We leave. And I've talked to one person after another who's done this. And I've seen the same thing with women. Man, my rights, you're stepping on my rights. I'm not going to put up with this. I had a woman tell me one time, my husband read my diary. That was it. I left him. You would be just shocked at the things people tell me they leave for. And I'll tell you something. This is why I'm telling you this story. I'm going to tell you a little bit more detail. I'm telling you this story so that you understand that I'm not talking to you from platitudes and heavenly spheres up there. I've had to live through what many of you think you have to live through and no one else understands. Not only did that happen in our relationship, but it brought so much emotional turmoil in my own life personally. I had no idea how to deal with this, that I would absolutely fly into a rage. Most women in this room today would have left me based on my behavior the first 3 years of our marriage. You would have left. And if you don't believe me, you can talk to my wife. We're a country of quitters today in America. I would tear our apartment apart. I'd make an advance on my wife. She'd give me the cold shoulder. I'd go a little more. She'd start to cry and I would lose it. I would absolutely, I thought, you lied to me. This is garbage. What am I stuck with? And I'd tear the place apart. I would tear it. I'd break things we could never replace. We were poor. I couldn't replace it. I'd rip things apart. I'd say mean, nasty things and walk out of the room. And then I'd go fall in a heap with a tremendous amount of guilt, realizing what I'd done and it was all wrong and had no idea how to get out of this cycle. I can stand here today and tell you the 13 years in a marriage, my marriage is more exciting, more passion-filled, more exhilarating than just about anybody I've ever met. And I mean that. I don't care. Some of you think, oh man, Mark, we're in love. Man, we're in love. Well, you come home and talk to me sometime. I'll talk to you on a personal basis. We'll compare notes. It is so exhilarating. It is so exciting. My wife, I am captivated with that woman. You couldn't kill me to leave her. You couldn't pay me to leave her. I love her and I'm in love with her and I'm staying in love with her. Our love is for a lifetime. But I want to tell you something. We've had to go through the difficulties, and I can share with you in the next 3 weeks how you can make your love exciting, permanent, deep, meaningful, and have it stop being boring. And I've had so many people tell me, hey, you know my marriage is? It's boring. If I was going to describe you one word, my marriage, it's boring. I don't trust him. She doesn't trust me. God can heal broken relationships. He can heal a life. He can heal a heart. The question is, though, are you willing to let Him? Are you willing to cooperate with God? The only thing, I'm going to share this with you. The only thing that kept Kathy and I together during this period of our life was one exclusive thing. Now, you don't want to miss this because I'm very serious about this. When I stood in front of her, I made a promise. And when she stood in front of me, she made a promise. A lifetime promise. For better or for worse. In sickness and in health. For rich or for poor. And we've had them all. And we made a covenant. We made a promise. It is lifetime love. I talked to parents who have told me, Mark, my children came up to me the other day. And they said, their little friends, you know, parents are getting divorced. And they'll say, Daddy, Mom, are you going to get divorced? Are you going to get divorced? And I have parents tell me, I don't know what to tell them. I hope we don't. You hope you don't? That's sort of like saying, well, I hope I don't blow my brains out. I hope I don't take the butcher knife and cut my hand off. You're not going to do that. You know you're not going to do that. That's not an option. And it's not an option. It is not. You must Close this door in your brain. Look those children in the eye and say, I will never, I've told my children, I will never, under any circumstance, ever leave your mother. I love her. I'd die for her. I would die for that woman. Because God has commanded me to, because I truly love her, and because it's the right thing to do. We have to become, in the 90s, in the 80s, we were people who got in touch with our feelings. Now we need in the 90s to become people who do what doesn't feel good, because it's the right thing to do. That's what we need to become. You will never invest in your marriage. There are people here today, in Friday night, who are going to go, all right, Mark, I'll give you a month. I'll give it this series, and I'll try it. But if it doesn't work, I'm out of there. I know that. You don't think I know human nature? People have come up to me and said, in tears, and I said, you were speaking right to me, like you read my mind. How did you know? And I look them right back and said, because I know you. Because God knows you. Because I know human nature. And the Holy Spirit knows human nature. And He's speaking to you today. Love is for a lifetime. And if you're not planning on it for a lifetime, don't mislead and lie to the person that you're engaged to. We're so consumed with our prenuptial agreements. Forget those prenuptial baloney. Why don't you sign a life contract in blood, maybe? That might help you a little bit. Rather than hedging your bet, hoping that maybe you don't get taken. Maybe if you think a little bit, if we think a little bit before we get married, you wouldn't get taken. But I want to tell you right now, you're going to go through difficulties in your marriage. God is going to refine you. It's going to work on you. Why? Because we don't know a whole lot about love. We don't know a whole lot about the character of love. Love is not just an emotion. In love is an emotion. Love is a choice. Love is a choice you make. Let me share with you what happens to most of us. We don't even realize it, but it happens. And this is what happens in our engagement period, in our courtship. We meet this person, we're captivated by them. But here's the interesting thing. In that brief moment, I have found this to be true, and I'll tell you how I know this. Because after I've been married, that doesn't mean that beautiful women disappear. Ladies? Well, I'm going to share some things during this series I hope wakes up a lot of you. All of a sudden, your husband, it's like every beautiful woman, they're all ugly. They're not. And I have still had to make choices today to turn off the desire. And if you don't think that's true, men and women, you read Proverbs chapter 1 through chapter 8. The entire first 8 chapters are on adultery. God is a realist. He doesn't live in a corner. Sex didn't sneak up on God. It wasn't like, you know, oh my gosh, that person's got genitals. Where did those come from? God made them. This is the place we ought to be talking about this stuff. His church. Not in the back alley somewhere, in the garage. God made this. He knows how it works, and He also knows that if you misuse it, it will destroy your life. Solomon says only a fool gives his strength to many women. Do not give your strength to many women. Give them to one. Or you'll ruin your life. You'll ruin your life. Proverbs says that adultery reduces a man to a loaf of bread. And he doesn't know that an immorality, says in Proverbs, pierces his heart like a stag. Walking about through the woods and the archer shoots him and an arrow pierces his heart. It will destroy your life. And we are living in a country that has been decimated by immorality and adultery. And the same thing happens when, after you marry, you have to make choices. Well, the same thing's true when you engage. You make a choice. You decide, no, I don't love that one. No, I don't love that one. I love this one. And then you know what happens? You let all desire go. The Bible says in Proverbs, of all that you guard, guard your heart, your affections, for out of them flow the sources of your life. You better be very careful what you love. Because you know what will happen? You let desire just go, and it will totally entangle itself in whatever object or person or thing you decide to love. And if it's the wrong thing, ripping that out of your heart is a very painful experience. It's very painful. And here's what happens. So you meet this person, you think about him. All you can think about him is good. You ever notice that? I didn't have one bad thought about my wife before we got married. Not one. Not one. I never doubted for a moment that she was the one. Never doubted for a moment she was the greatest woman on the planet. Not till after we got married, then I doubted all those things. And if you're being honest in this room today, many of you, if not all of you, are in the same boat because we're human beings. We made choices to be captivated by that person and to allow them into our life. And you fed the flame. And you fed the fire. And it needed more gas, you put more gas in. And then you get married. And then you know what happens? First thing that happens. You know, honey, you're close. We really need a wardrobe change, dear. The changes start to happen. Happens to almost every guy in this room. Almost every guy. And some of it's good. Some of us need a wardrobe change. Maybe you think I need one. Well, yeah, can't talk to my wife because I pick out my own clothes. So it's my own fault you can talk to me. All of a sudden, you know those sideburns? You think you could get rid of them? I really don't like them. It's amazing all the ways we want to change. Your cat, dear, the cat. I never could stand the cat. I endured the cat because I thought, and I thought that if I told you I didn't like your cat, you wouldn't like me. We become, during the courtship period of our life, often what we're really not. We become something different than what we really are because we want to hook them. We want to make sure, while they can still say no, they don't. Because we know once we're married, it's a little bit tougher to do that. Although not so much today. And then, once you walk down the aisle, people, you don't change who you are. It didn't, you know, it's like marriage just doesn't sort of like you blossom inside. What you have is two sinners living under the same roof of the opposite sex that see everything from a different perspective. Everything. Everything. And the next thing you know, life sets in, tensions set in, and you start making choices. You start making day in and day out choices to love or not to love. To love or not to love, to be patient or not to be, to be kind or not to be, to be captivated by her or not to be. And you know what the talk is like at work? The old lady, the old blankety blank, I won't say what they say at work. The old man, the old jerk, the old blankety blank, can't trust him, can't this. I, and this is the honest truth, when I was out in the secular workforce, I never had anybody say one good thing to me about their spouse. Never. Never. When I would say something complimentary about my spouse, it was almost like peer pressure to say something bad about him. They thought I was a jerk. You've got to be a fool, man. Absolutely a jerk. Marriage stinks. The reason most people say that is because that's the truth. For them, that's the truth. I want to ask you this morning, what are you going to do to make yours different? Are you going to quit? Are you going to give up? 50% of all people end their marriage within the first 3 to 4 years. Second marriages end at a rate of 70%. You want to become a statistic? I know you do not. I know that every one of us in this room desires to make our marriage alive and exciting and warm. I know that we all desire it for a lifetime. That's what God intends. And it can be that way. Marriage actually has gotten better for me. And it can for you. It can get better, richer, richer, richer. I mean, my wife's more passionate now than even when we were engaged. I'm 35 more passionate now than when I was engaged. Our marriages can be alive. They can be exciting instead of boring and dull. That's why most of us are dreaming about somebody else. It's because they've gotten dull, they've gotten boring. And the question is, why have they gotten that way? When the house gets dirty, who let it get that way? And if it's going to be cleaned up, who has to get it that way? It takes energy and it takes know-how. I want to ask you to do something this morning between you and God. I want to ask you this morning, when I'm closing this morning in prayer, as our heads are bowed, I want to ask you to tell God, God, I want to tell you right now, I'm making a lifetime commitment to my spouse. I'm making a lifetime commitment to my spouse. And I am going to do whatever it takes. I am going to become the man or woman that you want me to be. Because if you become that, you have a great marriage. That's the problem. You see, you know what's really awesome about God? God could speak the world into being in 6 days. God could raise Lazarus from the dead. Jesus raised Lazarus from the dead. You know why? Because Lazarus was dead. He didn't have a choice. But we can decide not to cooperate with God. And if you don't cooperate with God, there's nothing God can do in your life. Nothing. But if you will cooperate with God, there is nothing God can't do in your life. He can do dynamic things in your marriage. Many of us here have many women and men have a very wrong view of our sexual relationship and marriage. God can change that. Many of us dread it. God can change that. Many of us dread the thought of even staying another year with the person we're married. God can change that. If you're willing to change, God can do something beautiful in your marriage. And in closing, I just want to share this with you. Many of you here today, I know for a fact, are struggling. That's why I'm doing this series. I've been thinking about it for 4 months because I'm watching marriages all around me fall like flies. They're dying like flies. And I'm really concerned. And I want to share this with you. I don't want any of you to walk out of here today feeling bad for this reason. Most of you have no idea how to even make a marriage work. If I were to ask most of you, would you want the marriage your parents had? You would look at me and laugh and say, you've got to be kidding. Where do we learn how to have an exciting marriage? Who's teaching us out there? Phil Donahue? Good old Phil? Maybe Sally Jesse? Maybe Dr. Ruth? Oh, she can help you. Maybe Zsa Zsa could help you. Where in the world are we going to learn today how to have a vibrant lifetime marriage? There's one place, and one place only, and that's the Word of God, the Bible, and learning it from people who are doing it, who are living it, who can share it with you. In the next 3 weeks, I'd like to encourage you not to miss, because I'll share with you in the next 3 weeks the basic things that you need to turn your marriage around, to make it exciting. And you may be thinking, Mark, hey, it's doing fine. Well, maybe by the time I'm done, you'll be surprised. You might be surprised what your marriage could become. You might be surprised that at 45 years old, you could be more in love than you ever dreamed. You might be surprised. But I'd like to encourage you to come back. Now, as we bow our heads this morning, let's close in prayer. I just like you, as I'm praying, you have to do this out loud, just between you and God. I want you to tell God, Lord, I'm staying with my mate. And then I want you to do one other thing. On the way home today, or privately, I want you to tell your spouse that. I want you to look them in the eye and tell them, I'm yours. And I'm going to stick with you. And we're going to work this out. And we're going to get the help we need. And I want to tell you something. The help you need is not the secular psychologist. I told you I'm not pulling any punches in this series, and that's the honest to God truth. That is the worst place you can go. They will give you nothing but garbage for information. They will give you absolutely nothing to help make your marriage really vibrant and alive. Only God will. And we will help you. But I want you to make that commitment, because what you commit to, you will start to do. If you wait around till you feel like it, you will never feel like it. Your feelings will keep telling you, your friends at work, your girlfriends, your guy friends, oh man, get rid of her, dump her, man. Go try something new. I did. The reason they're all telling you that's because they did. And their life's a mess. You don't have to do that. And then I want you to tell it to your kids. And I want you to look them in the eye and get them in a living room together. And I want you to tell them, we just want you to know that mommy and daddy love each other and we're together for the rest of our life. You do that. You can do that. And with what you learn in the next 3 weeks, and what you learn in the seminar in about 6 weeks, my wife and I are going to do a seminar on marriage together here on Wednesday nights. You can come to that. And then we're going to have a conference in May on marriage. And I promise you, we can make your marriage work, because God will get involved in your life and He has the answers and will give them to you. If you want that. If you want my prayer, my earnest prayer. You have no idea how often Brent and I and Ken and other men and women I labor with pray for each and every one of you. For your marriages, for your lives. Our desperate prayer is that today you'll embrace the truth and let go of the lie. Love is a lifetime choice, and yours can be permanent, exciting, and exhilarating. But we'll tell you what you need to do. You need to take that step. Let's bow our heads in prayer this morning. Lord, I just thank you this morning so much that your love is permanent. I thank you this morning, Lord, as Nikki was singing, that you are the shepherd of our heart. You're the one who leads us and guides us. You're the one, Lord, who works wonderful things in our life. God, we must cooperate with you. You don't just push yourself into our lives. You draw us, you woo us, but we must make decisions today that affect the rest of our life. I pray, oh God, there wouldn't be one person here today who would make an excuse. Mark, you just don't understand. God, I do understand. I have counseled hundreds of couples. But even if I didn't, Lord, you understand. You understand marriage and the plan that you have and the parameters that you set. And I just pray, oh God, today that you'd help each man and woman here today who's married to make that permanent commitment and look their children in the eye and say with confidence, no matter how hard or how difficult, I will love your father. I will love your mother. We will work it out together because God will help us. I pray for that, Lord. We're living in a society, Lord, of young people that have no idea what love is about. Our kids are being decimated. And parents' hearts are being broken and shattered. And I, quite frankly, Lord, am tired of it. I want to do something about it. I pray, oh God, you'd help each person here to go and make that decision. You'll bless their life, Lord, as they do what's right. Help us, Lord. In Jesus' name.